You know, there are certain records over the years which had hooks so riveting that you just can't get them out of your mind, and this is one of them.
Your ma said you cried in your sleep last night.
Your ma said you cried in your sleep last night. The man who sang that hit is on the phone with me right now. Bop, 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 bop. Here's Kenny. Mr. Dino, are you there?
How you doing, Ron?
That's your entrance. Kenny, I think it influenced other recordings, actually. The bop, 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 I believe, influenced the Dave Clark 5, am I correct?
Well, it did, but God, it wrote bits and pieces, used it pretty much as a template, you know.
Uh-huh, bop, 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 bop.
Right, yeah, bits and pieces, bits and pieces, same thing.
I got another one. How about the Blues Magoos? We ain't got nothing yet. That came out a little bit later, and
yeah,
that was also influenced.
It could have, yeah. I would say, yeah, it probably did.
Yeah. Very derivative.
Really.
Where were you born and raised?
Well, I was born in Manhattan and raised on Hicksville, Long Island, where Billy Joel is from. In fact, we went to the same high school. I went to school way before him, though.
You didn't know Billy Joel back then?
Anyway. No, I didn't. No, my sister went to school with Billy Joel, but I didn't know him.
Who were your musical influences? Anybody in particular? Were you into rock and roll or pop music?
Pretty much, I started in Texas, south of San Antonio, and I started pretty much with blues. It was Doug Somm from the Sir Douglas Quintet was my first guitar player, and we did a lot of things, a lot of blues, country, and pop. That was my influence. I just liked everybody back then. I was a huge Little Richard fan, B.B. King, Bobby Bland, Jimmy Reed, and all those.
You liked a lot of the R&B sounds that were out there.
Oh, yeah.
Do you play an instrument?
I play piano.
Do you play piano on any of your recording sessions?
No, just to set up the songs and make demos that happen.
Okay, on stage, you don't play the piano?
No, no. Some shows, I might we'll take a keyboard. I might do some special things, but that's it. I'd rather be up there singing and performing.
I was reading up about you, and apparently in Hicksville, there were some scenes that were almost kind of like, I think you know where I'm getting, almost like out of West Side Story.
Yeah, it was kind of like that, because Hicksville at the time, I think it was around 1953, 54, 55, just before Blackwood Jungle. A lot of the Bronx kids and the Brooklyn kids were all moving out to that little town, and that's what it was becoming. It was really almost a real Blackwood Jungle.
A lot of fights?
Oh, yeah.
I understand a lot of them occurred in the parking lots of
Hicksville. Well, we were either one of the kids that grabbed your books and put it under your arm and ran home, or you hung with the crew out there. I wasn't either one of them, and that's why.
You were not a member of either of the rival gangs, so to speak. You did see a lot of leather jackets and chains, so with this sort of an environment, you kind of look to get out of that area. According to what it says here, to stay alive, you said, I just looked to get out and stay alive, and that's when you decided to do what?
Well, I decided to go into the Navy. I figured, let me see what that's all about. And that was basically it. And the music pretty much came out of the first 2 years in the Navy. I was with a Navy patrol squadron, and we were stationed up in Iceland. I had a contest. It was Air Force, Navy, Army, or whatever. And I went into the contest, and I came in second, and that kind of gave me that extra inspiration, you know, to keep it up.
Do you remember what song you did?
It was an Elvis Presley song. Yeah, I can't even
remember which one it was.
No.
Fast or Slow?
That was a fast song.
You ended up going to Texas. Was this after you left the Navy, or did you do this on leave? When did you actually tour Texas?
Yeah, it was after I came back to New York and signed up with Dot Records.
How long were you in the Navy?
4 years.
When did that start?
Yeah, it was 1956. Yeah, I think I got out of boot camp when Elvis Presley's first movie came out.
Love Me Tender.
Yeah, Love Me Tender, right.
So you spent 4 years in the Navy, then you came back to New York, and you ended up signing with, well, a major record company.
Actually, I did sign with labels in Texas, which I wasn't supposed to, I guess, when you're in the Navy. I signed with Arrow Records down there with Doug, Tom.
Oh.
Yeah, this goes way before I got with any of the labels.
Okay. You actually did a single on Arrow, and it is so rare that I have not been able to get a copy of it, On My Mind and Satisfied.
Nobody knows what it is.
Any of our listeners have a copy of that, send it to me, and I'll incorporate it into the show. I'm serious. You know, I'll put it in maybe as a bonus track. That came out in 1958.
Right.
You were actually first with Arrow Records. And you signed with DOT, I believe that was around 1961.
It was in the first part of 61 we signed with DOT, yeah.
Just Wait and See, was that one that you wrote or somebody wrote it for you?
No, it had nothing to do with it. My manager and myself were looking around for our own producers and writers to do our own independent stuff. We had nothing to do with the labels cut. Everything I did was cut by independent producers.
We're going to listen to a little bit of Just Wait and See. This is Kenny Dino. Just Wait and See by Kenny Dino. And I read in some of the material that has been written about you that DOT wanted to make you the next Pat Boone.
Or that's right.
Why would they need another Pat Boone?
I don't know. I guess somebody to fill shoes up there at DOT Records. That's what.
Did they have extra white bucks or something?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't looking to fill that image, though.
Oh, okay. Do you wear white bucks?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
But that was not the kind of style of music I was going for at the time.
Let's listen to the flip side of Just Wait and See. This is a little bit of A Little Bit, Kenny Dino. Dino, and that one called A Little Bit, Just Wait and See, and A Little Bit, that was a DOT Records release, and that was just a preview of what was going to come, which was quite different from those two recordings, a record called Your Ma Said You Cried in Your Sleep Last Night. You recorded Your Ma Said actually with the intention of releasing it on DOT, is that right?
I was assigned artist to DOT Records, but we had an independent production contract with them. In other words, DOT wasn't going to record me. We recorded myself. When I say we, it was my production team and manager. And we went out and cut, turned out the VMR set, and brought it to the people that ran DOT Records in Manhattan. And the day we went in the office, it was a very funny scene because I still was not into what was going down with the record. It was not what I wanted to do. There was a number of other songs that I wanted to record. Anyway, we finished it. We took it to the office and said, here's our brand new record. And I was sitting on a couch as my manager and the producers and writers were talking to Mickey Yatty, who was running DOT Records at the time. And he put it on his turntable. It was one of those big acetates. He put it on the turntable. I mean, it must have went 12 bars. He took it off. He says, take this piece of crap out of here.
He didn't like it at all.
No, he didn't like it. So I sat in the corner with a big smile on his face, and I'm listening to them talk. And he said, this is what I have in mind for Kenny. This is what we want to do with DOT. And you remember the little poetry thing called Three Little Fishies or whatever?
Three Little Fishies and a Mama.
Yeah, right. They wanted to do it.
Kay Kaiser, yeah.
Right, and they said that's what we would like to do with Kenny. And I was going, oh, man, I get it. And so I didn't say nothing, and I told Steve, who is the writer and producer, says, let's take a break. They'll ask him if we can come back later on today. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not doing that. Let's go back. We go back to the offices and get a release from the record company. And they said, you sure you want to do that? I said, yeah, I'm sure. We went back and asked Mickey Addy for a release. He says, you got it. We left DOT Records and we went to a restaurant and said, well, now what are we going to do? And they tried to sell it. Nobody wanted it. They went from record company to record company, up and down Tin Pan Alley, went to Nashville. They went all over the place. Nobody wanted the master. And a guy by the name of Aaron Schroeder, who had just signed Gene Pitney, he was Gene's manager. He was starting a brand new label to be distributed by United Artists, Musical Records. Him and Wally Gold were the owners of it. Wally Gold was somebody that went on to produce, I think, four or five of Streisand's albums. Anyway, we went out. We had the meeting that day in 1650 Broadway. Aaron put the record on his little player, listened to the whole thing. He stopped it, and the first thing out of his mouth was, what do you guys want? And they started the deal. They said, well, we want, I think it was 10%, which was unheard of.
Aaron really liked the song, huh?
Yeah, him and Wally, they loved it. And then my manager says, well, here's the deal. Every full page ad I put in Billboard and Cashbox, you do the same with the record coming. And he agreed to it. The record came out in 2 weeks. We went to number one in Atlanta. That started the ball rolling.
Your ma said you cried in your sleep last night. You should have seen the look in her eyes. I had a girl so little I liked. I know I haven't been so true to you.
Jackie wanted a raise, and he locked himself in the studio, and he played Your Ma Said for 12 hours straight, because they couldn't get the transmitter to shut it down, and this and that. Then he played it backwards, sideways, every way you could play Your Ma Said. It was on a number of the newspapers at the time down there.
Oh. Did he keep his job?
I don't know. I don't know what the outcome of it was.
I understand it would have sold more copies, except there was something unfortunate that happened.
There was a strike with the distributors. It was Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut. And you couldn't buy the record. That was at the time we were getting all that radio airplay.
Oh.
And we had all the major stations on the record at the time, but you couldn't buy the record.
Who wrote the song?
Steve Schlacks and Mel Glazer. And Mel's a teacher. He's on Long Island. It's one of the colleges out there on Long Island that he teaches. Him and Steve Schlacks wrote it. Steve went on to be a concert piano player. I think 2 or 3 years after we had worked together, he went to Europe, became a big star in Italy, had his own television show and whatever, and he's now living down in Boca. I don't think you know this. There was a TV show called Crime Story. It has a lot of name actors in it. The opening scene in Crime Story was somebody goes in and massacres people in a beauty shop, and they use Your Ma Said as the soundtrack underneath it.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm trying to get a clip of that.
I have read reports that you were not crazy about the song. Is that accurate?
No, I wasn't. It took them 6-7 months to even get me to go into the studio to record it. I thought the song was going to be like, does the chewing gum lose its flavor on a bedpost?
You know, until I read your publicity material, I never, ever would have associated Your Ma Said You Cried in Your Sleep Last Night with does your chewing gum lose its flavor. But I guess the only connection is the bedroom, the bed and the sleeping.
No, no. The connection would have been that it was a novelty. It was a title that was the longest title, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
You know, Your Ma Said You Cried in Your Sleep Last Night, and it was just so different. There was nothing like it out. You know, it was something that maybe Phil Spector might have pulled out of his hat.
Possibly.
I didn't want to get stuck in any of those kind of grooves where it's hard to get out of.
I understand. I could imagine Lonnie Donegan. Lonnie probably could have done a pretty interesting version of Your Ma Said You Cried.
I think so, yeah.
I guess if you wanted to, you could have probably done Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor? But you probably would say, well, I'm not going to do that one until I do Three Little Fishies.
Until I do Three Little Fishies.
Absolutely.
Right.
I'm Ronnie Allen, and... And the insanity you're listening to right now is me talking with a wonderful recording artist. See, we go from the ridiculous to the sublime, talking with Kenny Dino, who is not only a recording artist, but also a consummate entertainer as well. To work with some of the top names in the business, opened so many shows. You appeared on American Bandstand several times.
Yes.
And you did your Dot record on Bandstand, I believe, first.
We did Dot, and then I think it was Jamal Said.
Now, I understand you almost got to record the song Suspicion, which became a huge hit for an artist named Terry Stafford. How close were you to recording Suspicion?
Well, I did the original demo on it for Elvis. What I mean by the demo is I was good friends with Doc Pomus, who wrote all kinds of stuff. You know, forget it. His repertoire is incredible.
Oh, Doc Pomus. His partner was Mort Schumann.
And
the two of them together wrote some huge hits, like Save the Last Dance for Me is one of their best-known copyrights. They wrote for Elvis and so many other great recording artists. So you had this connection with Doc.
Yeah, I was with Doc's apartment. He had an apartment across from Central Park in Manhattan. And when he played the song, Suspicion, I asked him if Elvis was going to release it as a single. And he said, as far as he knows, it's going to go into an album. So I had a session coming up in about a month on Music Core, and I wanted to use the song on it. And I took it to my manager, and he declined. He says, I don't want to do it. And I kind of fought for it. I says, do me a favor, I'd like to do it. Took it to Aaron Schroeder at Music Core, and he says, okay, but he just kind of accepted it too quick, as far as I was concerned. But the night of the session, he did not do it. It was not there, and I got into a big argument with Aaron, and I left him with a session. They had to pay for it, I guess. And I was that upset, because at that point, where they were going and where they were directing me was not where I wanted to go, and Suspicion was a song that I really, really wanted to do, and I never got to do it. Terry did it, I think, about 8 months later, and it became a number one song. The Beatles had the first five records, and Suspicion went to number one.
It was a huge hit for Terry Stafford.
Yeah, it was a huge hit. What we've gone through, and all these artists and people that I've known in this business, it's like it's the ups, the downs, the disappointments. It's incredible.
Everybody has them.
Even
the most successful recording artist has had
exactly his
or her share of disappointments. At any rate, we're going to move forward right now. You did a lot of touring. Before we get to the touring, I'd like to play the follow-up to Your Ma Said You Cried in Your Sleep Last Night. Now, I know this is not a song that you personally are crazy about, but
no,
I know, it's called the Rosie song, but I heard it and I said, hey, you know, it's different and maybe some of my listeners are going to like it. So if it's okay, even though you might cringe, is it all right if I play Rosie?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why Do You Wear My Ring? This is definitely not one that you wrote, right?
No, had nothing to do with it.
Who were the girls? Just session girls?
No, they were just girls from a high school, Syosset High School,
okay,
on Long Island, that the producers had used to do the background.
We need some background singers. Hey, girls, come on. Want to be stars?
Yeah, right.
There you go. Brought them into the studio, and this was going to be the one that was going to cement your career. And instead, it cemented it into the ground for a few months, probably.
Yeah.
This is Kenny Dino. You can cringe now. Rosie, why do you wear my ring?
Love me.
was Rosie. Why do you wear my ring? Kenny Dino. It's okay. You probably went out, got a snack while I played that record, and you came back. Okay. It's over, Kenny. You don't have to worry. I'm not going to mention it anymore. When Beatlemania came along, I have heard that Joey Reynolds wanted to pull some sort of a prank, and you were involved in it. Was Joey at the time on WKBW?
Yeah, in Buffalo. He was up in KBW.
Currently, he's in New York City, but back then he was on WKBW. What sort of prank were you involved with Joey?
I went out with Doug Moody, who was a rep for Mercury and Smash Records at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the kind of thing where you run on the roads, headed up north, through Connecticut into Buffalo. But every time we saw a radio station, we'd just stop and say hello to the DJs at the station. And that was the kind of thing. But our purpose was to get this up to Buffalo to see Joey. Because at the time, Joey's station was really powerful. It was a 50,000 watt.
Oh, man, you could hear it almost anywhere in the country.
It was very powerful. Yeah, at 10 o'clock at night, he just covered all the states up there. It was just incredible. And Doug had told Joey that we were coming in, and we pulled in the parking lot and got into the station. Security let us in because it was that night. And as we're walking through the hall, you can see him in a Glass and Co.'s studio. Now, Doug is an Englishman, by the way. So Joey says, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have incredible guests that have arrived here. You won't believe this." And we're listening because, the speakers are in the hallway.
Right.
He says, "We have two of the Beatles. Can you believe that? Two of the Beatles."
Did you know he was going to do this or not?
We had no idea. Well, this is at the beginning. This is just when they were coming to the United States for the first time.
Yeah.
And so we got in the studio. He goes to commercial. And as the commercial's on, he says, "Doug, make believe you're Paul. Kenny, you can be, George." I says, "I don't have an English accent." "Yeah, well," he says, "you've got to do it a little bit, can't you?" And I said, "I don't know." Let's see what we had. So he was just crazy, right? So we did this little thing, and I have no idea what we talked about. But they called up from downstairs about 15 minutes later. The parking lot, I think I had 1,000 or 1,500 people showed up outside the studio, and it was snowing. And we had to get out of the studio. They were there. So as we're coming down the hallway to the front doors of the studio at the parking lot, they pulled, which he had. He had a Lincoln Town Car, Doug.
Right.
And as we're walking, there was three little teenage girls standing right, their faces up against the door, and they had four or five cop cars out there. They had my hair combed like a beetle. But one of the girls recognized because I had been up there 4 weeks ago doing a show.
Uh-oh.
That's Kenny Dina. They grabbed the girl and put her in the office. So they made a little pathway and made this diving run for the back.
She recognized you, huh? The jig was kind of...
The little girl, yeah, this little teenage girl recognized.
I know him. Right. He ain't no Beatle.
Right, that was the story.
Did Joey ever confess on the air that this was a joke?
I don't know. I don't know what they did. That's probably later on they said.
So how did it feel being a Beatle for a day?
Oh, that was fun. I got to meet him when I came to Boston because Derek Taylor was the road manager. I went to the hotel and told him who I was, and they sent word upstairs, and they said, "Yeah, set him up." But when I got to the room, there was 30, 40 people in the room, and just shook Paul's hand. And
you couldn't spend a lot of quality time there.
No, there was no quality time.
None at all. But, they say sometimes that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but if you're talking about a Kenny Dino imposter, I'm not so sure if that's the case. It was actually somebody that was going around and performing and doing "Your Ma Said You Cried" and saying that he was Kenny Dino?
Yeah, about the time of the record, and it was someplace in Tennessee that somebody was doing shows, a number of shows, and it just got back to us that there was somebody impersonating Kenny Dino. Because the acts back then, you could get away with a lot of things. You could say, "This guy's be Gene Pitney and do a show," and, promote or put somebody on. And it actually happened
You caught this guy, though, right? You or your manager?
No, we never found out who it was.
Oh, but did you get him to stop?
No. As far as I know, it was left in my manager's hands, so I don't know what he followed it up.
Where are you living now?
I'm in Florida, not too far from the Kennedy Space Center.
I want to ask you about Clay Cole. Did you do some shows with Clay?
Yeah, I did a lot of the things for Clay for the TV show. And then we did a stage show for Clay, which was with Freddie Cannon, Bobby V, Tony Orlando, and myself, and that was sometime in the early 60s.
This record that I'm going to play, Betty Jean, has a Feldman-Goldstein-Gottera connection, FGG, I believe.
Yeah, they were the producers, and Freddie Cannon, I think, was the writer on it.
Did Freddie ever record the song?
Not that I know, to my knowledge. I've never heard the record by Freddie.
But you knew Freddie. Freddie didn't write the song for you, necessarily.
I don't know. I signed up with FGG Productions, who did The Angels, my boyfriend's band, and they picked the song.
Betty Jean, you've done it again. You're playing a game of life, yeah.
was Betty Jean, song written by Freddie Cannon and sung by Kenny Dino, and we are winding down. Over the years, you've shared stages and friendships with such artists as Neil Diamond and Tony Orlando, we just mentioned, Dion and so many others. And
the Belmonts, too.
And the Belmonts, too. Can't forget the Belmonts. And Hall of Fame songwriter, Doc Pomus, who we mentioned earlier. Also, Sid Wayne.
He was my mentor.
They have both publicly stated that you have one of the best voices in the music business, and who are you to argue with that? Where are you doing most of your performances these days?
I'm pretty much located in Central Florida, so it's between Miami, Orlando, Daytona, and up and down the 95 corridor.
During your performances, you do a tribute to Roy Orbison?
I've been doing that for the last 7 or 8 years now. In fact, we did it with Gary U.S. Bonds last weekend and Johnny Thunder.
You know, for a guy who recorded a huge hit single, Your Ma Said You Cried in Your Sleep Last Night, it's probably appropriate that your CD is called Working on My Dream. Have you finished your dream, or that's just the name of the CD? What does that title mean, Working on My Dream?
It means never giving up. Keep going, okay. going.
Most of the songs on this CD show kind of a different side of you. We're going to close the show with a song called The First Thing on My Mind. We want to point out that you have a website, which is www.kennydino.com. People can not only read about you, but they can also sample some of your music as well. Is this CD available on your website or from your website?
Yeah, it's on CD Baby, I think, and Amazon.com, and it's in a few places.
The First Thing on My Mind. Who wrote the song?
The song written by Art Palmer and myself.
Kenny, I want to wish you all the best of success in your upcoming ventures.
Thank you.
And now, The First Thing on My Mind. The show. Now a couple of bonus tracks by Kenny Dino. The first one is called What Did I Do?
Oh, tell me what did I do that made me lose you? Was it something I'm
finally, here's Kenny doing a song called Dream a Girl.
If all I had to do was dream a girl.
All I